Carolina Snowflake. Carolina Snowflake. Carolina Snowflake.
I'm Amanda.
I'm Jason. I'm Jason. And we're back with another episode of the Carolina Snowflakes podcast. Oh, I guess our audience is happy to hear from us.
They are stoked.
You know, we've been gone for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a minute.
We should maybe fill in the fans here on the snow globe on why we've been gone for a second. Well, we both switched jobs. That was a pretty big thing. Real life kind of happened. Mm-hmm. We both had to switch jobs for varying reasons, various and sundry reasons.
Yeah.
And we had to refuculate our lives. And now that that's complete, we're in a position where we're ready to start recording again. I've got some great ideas for episodes.
We're back.
We're totally back. And I think people are going to be happy to see us from the sound of things.
They already are.
It seems like people are happy. So that's pretty cool. Thank you, studio audience. I very much appreciate that. So, you know, one of the things that we were covering before we took our like year-long break was we were covering Jordan Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to sort of get an addendum to that. So I realized that recording episodes about Jordan Peterson would take hundreds of episodes to really go through all the shit that I wanted to say about Jordan. Like, I could do a whole podcast for years just on Jordan Peterson to really get into the nitty gritty. And I just didn't want to do that. I don't want to make this the Jordan Peterson podcast. So I decided I was going to let that be handled by people who are more equipped or maybe want to do a whole series for hours and hours and hours on Jordan Peterson, but I couldn't do it. I don't think that I could do the justice to it that it deserves unless I spent way longer than I was prepared to. So we're going to let the other professionals handle him. And instead, we're going to switch gears a little bit for this episode, or for these next foreseeable episodes. We're going to be talking about Republicans, because it is an election year. It's 2024.
Mm.
So we're all happy to be here in 2024. And, you know, I realized something, that during this election, we're going to have, you know, probably two old men going at it in the election, two really, really old men. And it made me think, like, man, these guys have been around for a long time. Like, what about the Republicans who were alive before and did all their shitty shit before we were even born?
Mm.
You know, as it turns out, there's a cascade of Republican shitbags who have existed in our politics before most of us are aware, and they did their Republican shitbaggery before, like, say, before I was born, or you know, before you, when you're out there listening, before you were born. And what I learned is that a lot of these dudes, these old Republicans, they did the same thing the new guys are doing. Like, you can totally learn about the way Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis or Ted Cruz behave and what they are into and why, the things they say, by going back and looking at Republicans from the earlier 1900s all the way up until the late 1900s to the aughts, to the 2000s. And as it turns out, they're all the same fucking person. Like, they're all the same. There's just a cascade of this same dude who just keeps doing this
same
over and over
again.
Shit. Yeah, and so I wanted to call this series of episodes we're going to do our RSS feed, the Republican Shitbag Series. So that's what we're doing. We're doing the Republican Shitbag Series here on the Carolina Snowflakes podcast. And this is our first in our RSS feed. So in our series on Republican shitbags, I think the first person that I decided we were going to go over is a man named G. Gordon Liddy. Now, do you know who G. Gordon Liddy is or was?
I know the name,
mm-hmm.
but beyond that, no.
Okay, that's great. That's perfect.
Perfect.
If you don't know who G. Gordon Liddy is, that's for the best, because I promise the story is going to go in a direction that you will never see coming.
Okay.
Most people know way less about this motherfucker than they should, and that's why we're here today, so that we can go over this guy's insane life and we can see what we can learn about how fascists operate. So, just to get in, I mean, he's a fascist, but aren't all Republicans? Without a doubt, many of the toxic right-wing shitbags in modern politics are heavily, and I put that in a capital, heavily influenced by G. Gordon Liddy. They imitate him quite a bit. So as we're going through this story, I want you to think about the things that our modern Republicans do that align with the way this fucking guy is. It's going to be a lot. Just to start off, Liddy did actually write his own autobiography, so we do have some pretty good insight into the way he thinks about things. And in fact, most of his early life, if not pretty much all of his early life, I'm getting from his autobiography. It's titled Will, colon, The Autobiography of Gordon Liddy, of G. Gordon Liddy. So it's just titled Will.
Will?
Will.
Like W-I-L-L?
Yes, Will.
Oh.
Yeah, you'll get why. I'll explain why later, but it will become clear why his book is named Will.
Okay.
He was born Gordon Battle Liddy in 1930.
Lily?
Liddy. L-I-D-D-Y.
Liddy.
Yes. He was born in 1930. His dad was named Sylvester, and he was a lawyer, and his mom was a homemaker. Gordon was named after a guy named George Gordon Battle, who was a lawyer from back in the day, like the 1880s to the 1940s in New York. He was a Democratic lawyer in New York who did a lot of really awesome shit for the city.
Okay.
He's partially responsible for, like, the reason New York City is organized the way it is. So he was actually named after, like, a beloved Democrat, which is going to be really, really fucking ironic as we go
awkward
through this. Yeah. Isn't that weird? Isn't that strange? Also, the name Battle is a weird middle name. His middle name is Battle.
Battle's an awesome name.
Yeah, it is kind of an awesome. It's like a wrestler name.
Yeah.
I kind of like it. That's just some weird shit about him. So he's born in 1930. He grows up pretty rich because of his dad was a lawyer. So he grew up the way a lot of rich kids grow up. He moved around a little bit in his young life. He spent time in New Jersey, Washington, D.C., New York. You know, his dad was a pretty hotshot lawyer, so they were kind of moving around a bit in the places where politics happen. So according to Liddy in his autobiography, he was afraid of everything from the time he was very young. He tells a story about the Hindenburg flying over his house when he was a kid and being like terrified of the Hindenburg when he was like two. And that story actually does check out. Where he was living at in New Jersey, the Hindenburg did fly over there, so it did happen when he was like a two-year-old that he was terrified of the Hindenburg.
Well, I mean,
yeah,
I kind of would understand that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty scary thing if you think about it, plus the way it ended.
Well, that too. But I just meant like, you know, if you're two and this wasn't really a thing.
Yeah, this giant Zeppelin flies over your house that blocks out the sun.
And it was pretty crazy looking.
Yeah. So that scared him. And apparently his mother was pretty domineering, wanted to make him right-handed, even though he was instinctually trying to be left-handed. And she was very domineering about it. So he responded to her with terror. He saw like lots of things that scared him. His whole beginning life in his book as a child is him being afraid of everything, which is important.
Yeah.
It's important to keep in mind that this dude grew up scared of everything. He did have this weird asthma thing that required him to sit in a tent with steam for like 2 hours a day for a lot of his childhood, which I've heard things like that for children can kind of make them feel isolated and separate from the rest of the world because they require this medical treatment that takes up a lot of time that other people don't have.
Yeah.
So I think that contributed to his like fear and feeling isolated. In his book, he also describes being afraid of moths. He really was afraid of moths. He was afraid of nature in general, and he was really afraid of God. His parents were Catholics, so that extra healthy fear of God.
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense.
That tracks.
He tells a story about, this is a really funny story. He tells a story about when he was a kid, and the nuns taught him that there was a kid in his class who had a small, like, withered arm, like a deformity. And they told him that the kid had made the sign of the cross lazily and went to bed. And God punished him by withering his arm.
That's messed up.
Yeah, isn't that fucking crazy?
Nuns.
Yeah. And so, yeah, he was, like, terrified. He was this, like, really scared young kid.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
Did he have any siblings?
I don't think so. I think it was just him.
Okay.
He certainly never mentioned any, so.
Then probably not.
Yeah, I don't think he did.
And that would probably also, I think, contribute to the isolation and
and feeling weird, like just different. So the nuns at his school were also into patriotism God and country in that order. That's the way they that he described it. And he, okay, this is how he chose to describe being at school saying the Pledge of Allegiance, okay?
Okay.
Quote, "We stood there at rigid attention, facing the flag, in lines straight enough to rival those of the massed SS in Leni Riefenstahl's Triumph of the Will. I pledge allegiance," we began. At the words to the flag, we shot out our right arms in unison, palms down, straight as so many spears, aimed directly at the flag. It was the salute of Caesar's legions, recently popular in Germany, Italy, and Spain.
What?
Okay, so do you see what happened there? He was doing, they were doing the fascist Nazi salute to the American flag. And that's actually a true story. There was a period of time where that's what kids did as a pledge of allegiance to the flag in the early 1900s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there are photos of kids at schools doing that salute to the American flag.
Huh.
Notice he brought up the SS in the movie Triumph of the Will. Are you familiar with that?
No.
Okay, so this guy named Leni Riefenstahl was a Nazi who made propaganda, and he made a film called Triumph of the Will, which is like the big Nazi film. It's the biggest, most famous Nazi propaganda film. And he loves the SS. In fact, this is the first of literally dozens of times that he brings up the SS when he doesn't need to. Mm-hmm. There's a thing about Gordon where he's gonna reference the SS way more than a normal person would. He's gonna compare pretty much everything to the SS, and he's gonna reference Nazis way more than a normal person would. So this is the first of many times he's gonna do that.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's his description of what it was like in school. You know, just doing Nazi salutes to the flag.
Just the use.
And then noting that those were the salutes of Caesar's legions that recently became popular in Germany, Italy, and Spain. And this is 1930.
Mm.
Well, late 1930s. So you get where he's going with that. Fascism, baby.
That's what you do right before recess.
Fascism. Yeah, I just do a little fascism. It's
totally normal.
That's what we do before we go to school. This leads us to talk about what we might consider G. Gordon's Nazi influence. Like most rich kids, he had grown up with a nanny, and his nanny's name was Teresa. She was a German immigrant who loved the Nazis. She was a huge fan of the Nazis. She told him many heroic stories about the Germans and the fight they have had against the world, and about how World War I was a bunch of bullshit and Germany was the good guys. And he loved to hear her stories about this stuff. They used to listen to Nazi speeches on the radio, including Adolf Hitler.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah, he's still a little kid.
Oh, can you imagine hiring a nanny?
Yeah, and she ends up
she's a Nazi sympathizer, and she's taking care of your kid.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up. We'll get into that. So she told him all these stories. They were listening to Hitler speeches. And he wrote about how Hitler was the opposite of fear. The quote is, "Here was the opposite of fear," is what he said about Hitler. So you can kind of picture it, you know, him being a scared little kid, and he hears this confident Nazi Hitler speech. It attracts him. He's like, this guy is what I want to be. Like, I want to be not afraid of anything.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
It's a fucked up thing for like a 5-year-old.
Oh.
Yeah. They set him down on a path to conquer his own fear, which he will carry with him his whole life. He will constantly be trying to conquer his own fear, and in theory, because he thought Hitler was so cool.
That's messed up. It's like, hey, little Gordon, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Hitler. I want to be Hitler. Yeah, that's basically what it was. The weird thing is that his father did not like the Nazis.
Oh.
And so Gordon respected his father nearly as much as he liked fascism, so he was torn.
What do I do?
One day, his father came in and heard him and Teresa listening to Hitler, and his father got really mad. And from here on, him and Teresa had to sneak listening to Hitler and hide it from his dad.
Oh, my God.
So now his dad has made it Hitler taboo.
Was she the only nanny available?
Well, that's the thing. Teresa helped them for a while, and they kept it as a secret, but eventually Sylvester does realize that Gordon was being indoctrinated by Teresa, and he fired her.
Oh.
And he instead...
He's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I think she's having influence.
Yeah. So he instead hires a German Jewish lady who escaped Nazi Germany to be Gordon's new nanny, and Gordon didn't like her very much.
Oh.
So.
Well, gee.
So his dad did try.
He tried, but it was too late.
But it was too late. And Gordon was fucked up from a very early age. Mm. The next influence that G. Gordon had on him was his Uncle Ray, which would have been his dad's brother. Now, his Uncle Ray was in the FBI. And the family mythologized Ray's FBI exploits to the point where they become super heroic. Mm. So Gordon has this idea that, you know, Ray is this powerful FBI man who's kind of like Hitler. And so Gordon really likes Ray. And Ray always carries a gun. Like, he's one of those feds that's always wearing the straps and you can see it. He's always carrying a gun. And the gun he carried was a 38 Special, which at the time was probably the most powerful handgun that you could get. And Gordon's obsessed. Like, this is the best gun ever. This is the best gun you could ever have. And he was obsessed with Ray's gun. Mm. He would talk about it constantly. And here's a quote of a story from his autobiography that just blows my mind. So, quote, "I was five. I slipped into Ray's room and found it lodged in the lid of his suitcase. This was a rarity. Not only was it something I feared, so did everyone else. My curiosity got the better of my fear, an uncommon occurrence. Quietly, I withdrew the pistol and examined it, then managed to get the hammer back and the safety off. Proud of this accomplishment, I walked into the room where the adults sat to show them what I had found.
Oh, no.
Uncle Ray spotted me, and he immediately knew the pistol was loaded. Rising, he placed himself directly in front of the muzzle, smiled warmly, and then reached down and placed his finger between the hammer and the firing pin. He grasped the piece and gently disarmed me. This gun, he informed me, quietly, was his. He would, however, get one for me. Soon thereafter, he did. A pistol replica of the Colt." Mm. So that's a fucking crazy story. So little G. Gordon is going around finding his FBI uncle's gun, loading it, pulling the hammer back, and tearing the safety off and running in and being like, "Hey, guys, look what I did." And his uncle calmly just risk getting shot.
Just being like, "Hey, kid."
And then it's like, "Hey, this one's mine, but I'll get you one." Ugh. That's a fucking crazy story. That's nuts.
Things have really changed, though, in terms of child safety. And
I don't know. See, I wouldn't be surprised to hear stories from some of our modern Republicans that were very similar about them being kids and just, like, finding guns and being obsessed with them. Like,
that's true.
Yeah, being obsessed with guns from a very early age seems like a very Republican thing. Mm. So at this point, G. Gordon decides, like, he really needs to conquer his fears, and he calls it earn his genetic heritage. So he believes it is, yeah, he believes the face. I wish you guys could see the face on Amanda when I said earn his genetic heritage. So, yeah, he believes, like, his uncle's a badass, his dad's a badass. Like, and they tell him war stories about their grandfathers. So they're like, he's like, "I'm supposed to be a bad, hard motherfucker, but I'm not. I'm scared of everything. There's, like, something wrong. I haven't earned my genes." Which is a really fascist way to look at things. And again, remember, we're talking about like a five, six-year-old at this point.
Yeah.
It's super troublesome and worrying.
It's concerning.
It's very concerning.
It's very concerning.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
He was deeply ashamed not to be a macho guy, which he thought was like in his lineage. So he actively puts himself into situations that he finds frightening. For example, he tells a story about one time he was afraid of rats, and one time his cat brought in a dead rat, and Gordon picked up the dead rat and took it to his room and made a little fire and cooked the rat and then ate it.
In his room?
In his room as a little kid, so that the rats would fear him instead of him fearing them because he had devoured one.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
That's a pretty psychotic.
Well, it was either fascism, republicanism, or serial killing.
Yeah.
I mean, one or the other.
Yeah, yeah. There's kind of a dark triad thing happening
here.
There's
all the
here.
Bad things are happening.
These are big warning signs. And like, as you know, this is from his own book. This is what he's writing.
Yeah.
This isn't what other people said about him. This is what he said about himself.
I had to teach those rats to fear me.
Uh-huh. They're so scared of me and not
me
scared of them.
I went and took that rat into my room and set a fire.
And ate it.
Ew.
Yeah, yeah.
The cat watch? Or
I don't really know.
Was
he doesn't
cat
describe,
like, what are you doing?
He didn't really say what the cat does.
What are you doing, dude?
It's a good question, though. Another example is, like, he was afraid of thunder and he was afraid of electricity. Mm. So he stripped the insulation off wires to a lamp and plugged it in and electrocuted himself on purpose for hours in his room.
What?
To try to get over his fear of electricity.
What a weirdo.
Yeah.
That probably did something, too.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. It's
right?
not good to be electrocuting yourself for long periods
Don't
of time.
Don't they do that? And or they used to?
Yeah.
For mental...
They still do.
Stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, electroshock treatment. Yeah, he's doing this to himself
as a
child.
He's just, like, in his room, just zapping himself.
Eating rats and zapping himself to get over his fear. What a absolute psychopath.
Oh, God, Gordon, Gordon.
Yeah. Oh, Gordon. This is just him as a kid. It's fucking crazy.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
He really needed a friend.
Yeah, he did.
Oh.
He did. I think that's another, like, rich kid thing. You know, he moved around a lot. His dad was a lawyer. He didn't really have, like...
And it sounds like he didn't have siblings.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, he didn't have friends around. He just...
Yeah.
This is what... When you leave a little... psycho baby alone, he gets obsessed with guns and fascists and Hitler and electrocuting himself, eating rats.
Oh,
yeah, he's nuts. So Liddy, he can't enlist in World War II because by the time it starts, he's a little too young to, but he wants to start preparing to be a soldier. He's hoping the war will be going on by the time he reaches the age where he can enlist.
He's like, oh, please last a while.
Yeah. But
really want
to
go.
Yeah, he wants to be comfortable killing. This has becomes his idea. Like, I need to be comfortable killing. So he wants to get a gun, but it's so he can start killing animals to practice on them before he moves up to people.
How is
in a
this
war?
Not just serial killer? This is a serial killer.
Yeah. I mean, you got to remember, though, this is 1930s. I guess things
matter.
May have been different.
It doesn't matter. They have studied this. And
yeah.
These are all the signs.
Yeah.
Like, oh, God.
Well, his dad won't get him a real gun, but he does get him a BB gun. Now, Gordon wasn't deterred by this. He actually, it's interesting, he actually went to the library and figured out how to mix saltpeter and other stuff to make gunpowder.
Mm.
And then he also figured out how to cut off the barrel of his BB gun and modify it with homemade parts and make a homemade gun.
So like a sawed-off BB gun.
That he turned into an actual gun that would shoot 22 rounds.
So basically a bomb maker, too.
Yeah, he figured he went to the library and figured out how to...
He's like a serial-killing mm-hmm. Kaczynski yeah, Hitler.
Yeah. Yeah, but, there's a lot wrapped into this dude being terrible.
No, God, he just needed a friend.
Where this goes, the fact that you don't know how this story ends is the craziest part of all. Because he will end up being a very important person. So it's fascinating that this is how he grows up. He goes and he kills a rat with this, or a squirrel with this homemade gun. Like, yeah, it was a squirrel. Kills a squirrel with this homemade gun and he feels bad about it. He doesn't like it, but he tries to make himself feel better. So he cuts the tail off and puts it on his bike. So it's trailing behind him when he's riding his little bicycle. There's this just like cut off squirrel tail. Yeah. And, he was like, that wasn't enough though. So his neighbor owned a chicken farm and he, as like a 12-year-old, volunteers to go work there killing chickens so he can get used to killing things. And his neighbor let him do it because it's the 30s and I guess people are fucking crazy. And so this, he feels like he's kind of overcoming his non-murderous ways and like would maybe be a good soldier after he's killed dozens and dozens of chickens at his neighbor's house.
Okay.
So that's something.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So how are you feeling so far?
I still feel like you needed a friend.
Yeah, you have a grasp on who this guy is a little bit?
He's
as a kid, anyway?
Psycho. He's a serial killer.
Yeah, yeah. So Liddy's father, Sylvester, had decided that when he was a young man, his father hadn't hugged him enough. And he thought this was a mistake, and he didn't want to repeat it on his son, Gordon. So he went out of his way to hug little G. Gordon. But Gordon had a response to his father hugging him that I think is also further just crazy lunatic talk. It's crazy to hear a person talk like this. But this is what G. Gordon Liddy says about his father hugging him. Quote, "It always seemed to me that was just what he was doing, trying to hug me, wanting to but not knowing how. As if having never been the object of a fatherly embrace himself, he could not pass on what he had never received. In fairness to my father, I stress this was a subjective impression. The fact of the matter is he did hug me often, and it may well have been just my self-loathing, born of contempt for my weakness in the face of fear that rendered me unable to recognize genuine fatherly affection and unable to receive it when authored. Now, that's some fucking crazy insight there, because basically what he's saying is, I don't know if the reason my dad's hugs felt awkward was because my dad never got hugged and so he didn't know how to do it, or I just hated myself so much I couldn't receive his love. I don't know which one of those it was, but it was one of them. That's some crazy insight. So he's clearly not entirely devoid of understanding what's happening in the world. I mean, that's a well-constructed sentence or paragraph, and he clearly has some level of emotional understanding there, which I found really interesting. That's why I like that, putting that quote in there, because it's kind of, it shows you that level where these like weird fascists, Republican psychos can be really smart and insightful on these occasions when they hit things that they understand, but they're just most of the time completely out of touch. Yeah. I don't know. I thought that was interesting. So G. Gordon, he never gets to fight in World War II because it's over by the time he graduates high school.
Oh.
Yeah, poor guy. So he goes to college at Fordham University in New York City. At this time, Fordham was a Jesuit school. And if you don't know, the Jesuits are like a division of Catholicism that's like really into education and learning. And, you know, they're the smarty pants Catholics.
Yeah.
G. Gordon has an interesting way of describing them, though. He calls them the shock troops of the Catholic Church, similar to the SS. So there we go.
Another comparison.
Another weird random. Like, Gordon, why do you keep bringing up the SS for
Teresa really did a number
on
him.
For no reason. Why does he keep doing this?
Teresa.
Yeah, it's Teresa. It's Teresa. This is why, if you're rich, do not get a Nazi to raise your children.
Do not get a Nazi nanny.
Yeah, just don't do it. It's a bad idea.
Just don't.
Mm-hmm. So the Korean War breaks out. Hooray. So Gordon joins Fordham's ROTC, hoping that like it can parlay into him going to be a soldier in war. Yeah. The only problem is Fordham's ROTC is an anti-aircraft division. So he was kind of upset about that. He's like, your look on your face is also like, why would you need an anti-aircraft division in the middle of New York City? You really don't. The only reason they had them was to make people around feel better and to have the ROTC have a program.
I see.
So they have these anti-aircraft guns that they would have in the city to make people feel better. But the Korean War was never going to come to America.
Right.
So, you know, he was pretty upset, and he was like, damn it, I'm not going to get to kill people.
No.
Yeah, which is a bummer.
All that chicken killing for nothing?
Yeah, and I mean, I hate to be a spoiler, but he never kills anybody. Like, G. Gordon Liddy never kills anyone.
Well, I said it was either going to be grow up to be a Republican or grow up to be a serial killer.
Yeah, you could argue his Republican ways killed a lot of people, but he never actually gets
but
to kill anyone.
But he himself, right.
Yeah, he
I
wants
gotcha.
To.
He
does,
wants to. He's like, oh man, I really want to.
Yeah, he does actually join the military, but he never sees combat. He's very forced to exaggerate the things he does to make up for this fact. One particular story he tells is about a sit-up contest that he and some bored soldiers put together. So they decide to do it, and Gordon says he does so many sit-ups that he accidentally explodes his appendix.
Oh.
And he goes to bed and wakes up with the worst pain ever in his stomach, and as it turns out, he had exploded his appendix doing too many sit-ups.
Oh.
Yeah. So he's tough. This prevents him from finishing his training as a soldier, because he has to go to surgery for this for this appendix wound, and they're finishing up their training as he's done his surgery, and so he's got a big cut on his side where they went into it, and they won't let him do his training, so he decides to like wrap like four belts around his waist and go do the training, like sneak in and do the training anyway.
No.
And yeah, and this is like crawling through mud and barbed wire kind of training.
Ew.
So he's like, he's now closing his open wound, like crawling through mud and crawling under barbed wire, doing this like extreme training.
Ew.
And his superiors do not like this. They're like, dude, the last thing we need in the military is fucking lunatics crawling through mud with open wounds.
Yeah.
That is not what a soldier does.
Right.
But in his mind, he had to prove he was tough enough to do it. And so he's mad that they won't let him finish his training and go to kill people in the war. But they're like, dude, you just proved to us you are not capable of this. Mm. That is going to be a running theme. He manages to fail upwards his entire life. Mm. And this is the first time when he will fail upwards. That will happen repeatedly with this man. It's insane, but I think this happens with a lot of Republicans. I think failing upwards is a thing if you're a Republican.
Meaning you don't achieve the thing that you wanted to. And as a result,
you end up getting put in a better position.
Right.
Yeah, that happens. People will constantly try to push him off onto other people. Like, the officers are like, this dude's nuts. Let's send him to a position that's higher ranked, but technically isn't going to put him in combat.
Right.
So that's going to keep happening. Like, they keep basically being like, this dude's too nuts. They keep promoting
him. Yes. To make him someone else's problem.
Yes, which is, it's a thing that happens.
Oh, it definitely happens.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. There's actually a theory about it, about how that's how things work in the corporate world, is that you will get promoted.
It is.
Until you reach your point of failure where you fail so hard they fire you. Mm-hmm. Like, they will just keep promoting you until you're incompetent, basically.
Yes.
You will be pushed forward through the system until you reach the point where you're completely incompetent.
Yeah, and part of the reason that you're pushed forward is because the people that were in that ranking they don't want to deal with you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You're a risk.
Yeah. So that's what happens with.
So they promote you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, isn't that nuts? So the last thing we're going to cover this week is G. Gordon begins what I will, in tribute to Chris Jan, call his love quest. So it's now time for little G. Gordon Liddy to go on his love quest. He's gotten, you know, into college. He's gotten into ROTC. He's not going to make it in the military, really, but he's still there.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not going to be going to combat like he wants to. And he begins his quest by looking for what he describes as a tall, fair, powerfully built Teuton whose mind works like the latest scientific wonder, the electronic computer. I had worked long, hard, pain-filled years to transform myself to make a reality of my genetic potential, and now I believed I had earned the right to seek my mate from the world's finest genetic material.
What?
Which is the most insane.
Ew.
That is the most Nazi way of looking at trying to find a woman I've ever
you
heard.
You are a fine piece of DNA.
Yeah, yeah, that's what he's looking for. So he had several failed starts with subpar women that he meets, and he finally meets
subpar women.
That's how he describes them. Yes, that's a quote.
Ow.
And he finally meets one who's as tall as him, which he really digs. He's not very tall, actually. He's going to end up being like 5'8", 5'7". He's not that tall of a dude.
Mm.
But he finally meets a woman who's as tall as him, and he describes her as a beautiful, genius, strongly built Teuton Celt with a computer brain. They start a long-distance relationship, but they eventually get married and stay married for 54 years.
Wow.
So, I guess he did find his mate.
Love. Mm-hmm. Or something.
Okay. Yeah. So, Liddy and his wife were Catholic, and so they have lots of kids. He describes how he wants to have 6 kids in case some die or are duds or failures.
Again, duds?
That's his description, yeah. And so he's like, if I have 6, I'll get at least 2 good ones out of it. If one or two die, one or two are failures, I'll still have 1 or 2 good kids
right.
if I have 6. That's his logic.
Oh.
So after they have 5, though, his wife's body starts to give out. And it becomes,
she's like, listen, dude.
Because they have 5 kids in like 6 years. Like,
oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so her body is like, nah, I'm not going to do it. And the doctors are like, don't do it. So they have to shop around. The
doctors are like, stop.
Yeah. So they have to shop around to find a priest who will let her get on birth control. And they eventually do.
Mm.
So I guess the Catholic Church will let you get on birth control if it's a health thing.
It probably depends on what church.
Yeah, it took them. I mean, he describes it taking a little while to find one that would. So they're mm-hmm. pretty staunch about it. But I think even at this time, you could find a priest who would let you do it if the doctors were like, you're going to die if you get pregnant again.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. So here's the way Gordon describes it in his autobiography. Quote, although one of the reasons I had chosen Frances to be the mother of my children was her size and strength, which should have enabled her to bury at least 6 high-performance children.
Oh, God.
I certainly had not intended to risk damage to her by pushing her past her design limit.
her design limit.
Yes, that's how this crazy fucker described.
So after this person births five of his children, he still refers to her as like a a thing.
A thing, yeah. That's how he abused.
Like, yep. I got her because she was a thoroughbred and...
She should have been able to make half a dozen high-performance children easily, and I don't understand why, but I didn't want to risk damage to her by pushing her too far.
I didn't want to, like, just break her.
Yes, that's his description of that.
Wow.
I know. Is this not the most psycho dude you've ever fucking heard?
Yeah. Like, wow.
And so I think that's where we're going to leave it for this week. That's our intro to G. Gordon Liddy. Mm. So I hope we've piqued your interest, and I hope you were very curious to know where this is going to end up, because you're never going to be able to guess where this ends up. But that's him up to his love quest.
Love, quote.
Yes, and him getting married. So I think that's a good place to leave it for this week. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Carolina Snowflakes podcast, where we're going to continue on with G. Gordon's story. There's a lot more twists and turns, but I hope this piqued your interest and got you in.
I'll be back.
Yeah, and everybody, thanks for listening. I appreciate you all being here.
Thank you.
Great round of applause from our audience. And also, I wanted to do this in tribute to Gordon, because he would have loved it. That is something that Gordon would have loved. So on that note, thank you everybody for listening. We have a website, carolinasnowflakes.com. We have an email, carolinasnowflakes@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.